Welcome to the weekend edition of the Daily Stoic Podcast. On Sundays, we take a deeper dive into these ancient topics with excerpts from the Stoic texts, audiobooks that we like here or recommend here at Daily Stoic, and other long-form wisdom that you can chew on this relaxing weekend. We hope this helps shape your understanding of this philosophy, and most importantly, that you're able to apply it to your actual life. Thank you for listening. I'm just about to go into the studio to record my latest audiobook. My wife and I have been listening to audiobooks. We've been listening to audiobooks in the car as a family just to keep our kids off screens because Audible is amazing. And Audible is also the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases and next-to-listen recommendations to satisfy every type of thriller listener. If you want breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that will enthrall you, even brand new and exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, well, then you want to check out Audible. My wife and I were just raving about this true crime audiobook that we read called Furious Hours. And then I've been raving about this book, Night of the Grizzlies, which I loved. Audio piques the imagination and it brings thrillers to life. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Visit audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. That's audible.com/dailystoic or text dailystoic to 500-500. Hey, it's Ryan Holiday. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Stoic Podcast. We talk a lot about Marcus Aurelius here on this podcast, and maybe you think you know him because you read Meditations. Maybe you think you know him because you read my biography of him in Lives of the Stoics, but I'm pretty sure there's some things you don't know about him. Certainly, he continues to surprise me. You know, this idea of we never step in the same river twice. I think every time you look at Marcus, because he was just specific enough, just general enough, every time you look at him, you discover something new, you learn something new. And I think this is especially true in Meditations. Each time you pick it up, you see something, you find something different. That's what I wanted to talk about in today's episode. Some things that this very famous man, one of the most famous men in the world then, and you know, to a certain degree now, known to millions in his own lifetime, subject to countless books and articles and movies, that he could still have secrets. That might seem unbelievable, but it's true. And I wanted to reveal some of those in today's episode. It's going to be 18 things you probably didn't know about one of the greatest thinkers and philosophers and leaders who ever lived. And even if you did know them, well, it can't hurt to review them. And we're putting this out because we've got this new edition of Meditations out, which I've been talking about. I first read my Gregory Hayes translations of Marcus Aurelius almost 15 years ago, and it changed my life. Opened me up to so many things. It's what taught me some of the things we're going to talk about in today's episode. But I went out and I bought the rights, and we produced this really cool leather-bound edition that can, you know, withstand the test of time, hopefully become some sort of family heirloom that can be there for you as you revisit it over and over and over again. We've got those on sale for the holidays. You can check that out at dailystoic.com/meditations. You can pick them up at the painted porch. You can go to store.dailystoic.com. But I wanted to give you some thoughts on Marcus Aurelius, some secrets, some lessons, some things that you didn't know, but I really think you should know. And I'll leave it there. Who is Marcus Aurelius? What made him tick? And what do you need to know about him? Here we go. The first thing to understand about Marcus is that he lived through a plague. You know, people sort of vaguely understood that the Antonine Plague happens in Marcus Aurelius' time. That's why it's called the Antonine Plague. But I think it's only going through the COVID-19 pandemic over the last couple of years that helps one understand the way that an event like that would have shaped Marcus. One of my favorite quotes from Marcus, he says, there are two types of plagues. There's the one that destroys your life and the one that destroys your character. Quote holds true. There are people who, maybe they didn't get COVID, but they caught something much worse. Conspiratorial thinking, cruelty, indifference to other people. But Marcus's life is shaped by the plague. It's also an opportunity, a crisis for him to respond to as a leader. Actually, one of the things he learns from his stepfather, Antoninus, was to listen to experts. And this is why Marcus puts Galen, the great medical mind of his time, in charge of the pandemic response. But also the exercise of memento mori for the Stoics, the idea that life is short, that you could go at any moment. This is something Marcus would have experienced firsthand. He witnessed death all around him. Constantly, millions of Romans died in this horrendous plague. And ultimately, we think even Marcus Aurelius died of it. And his last words are a reminder to his friends who are crying over his deathbed, not to think of him, the singular individual, but all of the people who died of the plague and all of the people who would eventually die, including potentially his friends themselves. We have this image, of course, of the Stoic as the emotionless robot. So you might be surprised to learn that Marcus Aurelius was a little bit of a crier. Several of the stories that we have about Marcus, and we don't have many, involve him crying. He cried when he lost one of his favorite tutors. He even cried, it was said, openly in court one day when a pleading attorney mentions the immense death toll of those lost in the Antonine Plague. But Marcus was a crier, and life demanded, I think, tears from him in some cases. He lost multiple children. He outlived his wife. He was betrayed by a close friend. A Stoic doesn't have to stuff their emotions down. The idea is that you don't let those emotions overwhelm your life or override your ability to make rational decisions. But you have to be kind to yourself, and you have to let yourself feel things. You might not know that Marcus had a little nickname. His nickname was Verissimus. And this comes from the Emperor Hadrian, who notices the potential in this young boy and decides to set him up and train him to be his eventual successor. But he calls him this nickname. It's a play on the word truth or truthfulness. Marcus was the most truthful. Even as a young boy, he was surprisingly and refreshingly honest. And perhaps that's what made Hadrian select him to one day be king. Marcus was a bit of a crier, but he was not a good sleeper. And in fact, if you read Meditations, multiple times he talks about struggling to get out of bed in the morning. This isn't just because he's like us and getting out of bed in the morning is difficult. It's because he had trouble sleeping. He was not a good sleeper. He was a chronic insomniac. And I think that actually makes his drive to get up early in the morning to meet the day, to do his job, you know, it makes it more impressive. He didn't have an easy time of it. But ultimately, this insomnia is a thread running through Marcus's life. One chronicler of Meditations notes that it was in the midnight dimness that Marcus made his great contribution to philosophy, that he wrote his Meditations. Marcus had a sense of humor. Again, the stereotype of the Stoic being joyless, emotionless, it's wrong. In one of his letters to his tutor Fronto, he talks about this prank he played on a shepherd. But one of my favorite examples of Marcus Aurelius' humor is he jokes in Meditations about a man so rich he had nowhere to shit in his house. His house was so filled with stuff that he didn't have any room, and Marcus was mocking him. But I like the idea that this dour and serious Stoic still had room in his life for literal toilet humor. I mentioned earlier that Marcus had things to be upset about in life, and he did. And one of those was the betrayal of him by his best friend, his most trusted general, Avidius Cassius, who declared himself emperor. And this put Marcus in a serious bind. Obviously, you can't allow, as king, someone else to declare themselves king. And Marcus had to find a way to respond. And he did it in typical Stoic fashion. He said, it's an opportunity to treat someone well who has not treated me well. And he says, ultimately, to teach Rome how to respond to civil strife. And that's what he does to the best of his ability. Ultimately, Cassius himself is betrayed, which is what happens when you do terrible things. He himself is betrayed and assassinated. And we're told that Marcus wept, again, having lost the opportunity to forgive and be merciful to his friend. In Meditations, Marcus really says life is warfare and a journey far from home. And again, it's important to understand that parts of Meditations are literal. And in this case, Marcus is referring to the decade plus that he spends on the road. His predecessor, Antoninus, almost never leaves Rome. Marcus has to spend 12 years touring the empire, not for sightseeing, but touring the empire because he was at war. There's a famous story of Marcus returning one day to Rome and a cheering crowd greets him and they remind him that he's been gone almost 8 years. Marcus has to put up with a lot with his life, but he would have loved to spend time with his philosophy books, with his family, with his friends, in his beautiful palace. But life had other plans. I think the most remarkable thing about Marcus that people don't know, first off, that his father was not emperor. Marcus is chosen to be emperor. Hadrian selects Marcus, but realizes that Marcus is too young. So he chooses a placeholder to train Marcus for the throne, Antoninus Pius. And so Marcus is groomed for power. He trains for it. It's not this thing he gets by birthright, but there's a complication, which is that one of Hadrian's earlier potential predecessors had a son. And this son potentially thought that he was entitled to the throne, or other people thought he was entitled to the throne. So Marcus ascends to the throne. He's clearly the most qualified, the most trained, the most desired. And he has this potential rival. And we know historically what kings do to these rivals. They kill them. But Marcus does the exact opposite. The first thing that Marcus does with absolute power is name his stepbrother, someone he has no relation to whatsoever. He names him co-emperor. Can you believe that? The first thing he does with absolute power is give half of it away. And they rule effectively together as a team. I imagine Marcus going, look, it is a tough job. There's more than enough responsibility to go around. I'm going to share it. Marcus Aurelius lost 8 children before they reached adulthood. No parent should have to bury a child, as they say. Marcus Aurelius buried 8. And somehow this didn't break him. Somehow this didn't destroy him. How is that? But I do think there's one interesting Stoic exercise that Marcus Aurelius learned from Epictetus that perhaps helped with this. Epictetus said that as you tuck your child in at night, you should say to yourself, they might not make it until the morning. And the idea wasn't, oh, my children are gonna die. I should detach myself. I should write it off. I think the idea is that while you have your children, be present for them. Don't rush through bedtime. Be there for them. Soak them in. Don't take them for granted. And so we can imagine it being some solace, not enough, but some solace that as Marcus dealt with that horrible loss, he could at least comfort himself that while he had them, he was there and present for them as best he could.
I've talked a lot about my morning routine here. One of the things I do every morning after I get up is I take a bunch of vitamins that my doctor recommended after some blood tests. I take a vitamin C, a zinc, a omega-3, and I take a couple others who I'm forgetting, but I definitely know whose vitamins I take. And they actually happen to be today's sponsor, and I've been taking them long before Thorne sponsored today's episode. Thorne takes a personalized, innovative, and scientific approach to health and wellness with all their supplements, and they've teamed up with leading medical professionals to bring out highly effective nutritional supplements. Because I'm a runner, I'm always trying to take care of my joints. And with Thorne, I never have to question what's in each supplement. Give your body what it really needs with Thorne. Go to thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your first order. That's thorne.fit/dailystoic and use code dailystoic for 10% off your order. thorne.fit/dailystoic. Use code dailystoic. And note, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Marcus may have had all the trappings of success and power, but he didn't care about them. He said famously to the Senate that all of this is yours. I don't even own this house. But the truth is, even from an early age, Marcus slept on a hard mattress. He preferred the country life. He was a humble man. He lived a simple life. When his mother died and left him a lot of money, he gave it to his sister. He was tried to be generous. He didn't need much, and that made him a greater man. Marcus is, of course, famously associated with Stoic philosophy. He's considered the Stoic emperor. But Gregory Hayes, one of his great biographers and translators, is my favorite edition. Hayes points out that nowhere does Marcus explicitly identify with the Stoic. He, of course, quotes the Stoics. He, of course, says things that the Stoics said. But he suspects that Marcus would have been more of a generalist, that Marcus would have actually identified as a philosopher. What Marcus loved was philosophy and wisdom and anything that could help him get closer to the good life, to truth, to justice, to wisdom, to courage. But Marcus identified instead more as a philosopher than a specific school. I mentioned Marcus's kids. I think his wife, Faustina, is worth pointing out as maybe something you didn't know about her. He was married for decades, but he seems to have actually loved his wife. I think this is partly illustrated by all the children they had together, that he was a man, a human, with human urges, but that he seems to have genuinely loved and supported his wife. Even when people claimed she was unfaithful or tried to spread rumors about her, he accepted her and loved her and put it all out of his mind. Most marriages for professional politicians are not good ones, but Marcus's seems to have been great. You might not think of Marcus as a guy who doubted himself, who had what we now call imposter syndrome, but in fact he did. We're told that when Marcus was informed he would one day be the emperor, he broke down, again, in tears. He doubted whether he had what it took. He thought of all the bad kings in history, all the terrible things that they'd done, and he wondered if he could escape that, if he could still be a good person and be a king. So this is him doubting himself. He questioned whether he could do it, which I think is good. If you think, of course I can do it, I'm great, everything I do turns to gold, I don't think that's the right attitude. It's good to question yourself. It's good to have doubts. But then the day before he ascends to the purple, as they say, Marcus has a dream, and in this dream, he has shoulders of ivory. And this reminds him, he's stronger than he thought. He's strong enough to bear this. His shoulders can bear the load. And I love this image, the image of the ivory shoulders. You too are stronger than you know. We're stronger than we know. And that's what Marcus realized, and that's what helped him get over his imposter syndrome. Marcus has what might be the most magnanimous and impressive garage sale in history. In the depths of the plague, as Rome's treasury is depleted, as the economy is falling apart because of the devastation of the Black Death, Marcus holds a garage sale. He walks through the imperial palace and he marks goblets and jewels and robes and couches. He and his wife's most valuable possessions, he sells on the lawn of the palace. Not to raise money for himself, but to raise money for Rome. He doesn't care about the trappings. Remember, we talked about the simple life. Marcus's love of the simple life allowed him in this great moment to demonstrate an example of selfless leadership, of eating last, of putting others first. And I think it's one of the great moments of his life. We tend to think of philosophers as bookish, but Marcus was a nerd and a jock. He fought, he wrestled, he rode horses. He hunted, even with Hadrian. He was a man's man in that sense, but he was also a lover of wisdom and a lover of poetry and plays. We see this in Meditations. And I think it's a reminder, you don't have to be one or the other. You can be anything you want to be. Just be yourself, follow the interest that you have. There's a great expression though, mens sano in corpore sano, basically strong mind in a strong body. And I think that's what Marcus was. Marcus was someone who never stopped learning. There's a great story about Marcus towards the end of his life. He's an old man, one of the rare moments that he's there in Rome. He's leaving the palace carrying some books with him, and a man says, Marcus, where are you going? And Marcus says, I'm off to see Sextus the philosopher to learn that which I do not yet know. And the man marveled how amazing it is that the emperor, the most powerful man in the world, is still taking up his tablets and going to school. And that's how you have to think about education. Marcus's life is changed by a single book, in the same way that my life was changed by someone recommending Marcus Aurelius and Epictetus to me. Junius Rusticus, this is Marcus Aurelius's philosophy teacher, hands him a copy of Meditations. And he thanks Rusticus in Meditations for introducing him to Epictetus's lecture. He said, for loaning me his own copy. I just love the idea that all of history is shaped by this chance book recommendation. But it's not just the recommendation, right? I'm sure lots of people recommend lots of books. Epictetus has been recommended by lots of people. It's that Marcus followed it up. He read the book, and then most importantly, he applied it. Marcus's own book, Meditation, he was writing it to himself. He had no idea this would be published, that we would be talking about it today. He might well be mortified, right? This isn't a work of published performative philosophy. It's the private notes of the most powerful man in the world. Although Marcus was Roman and the Romans spoke Latin, he wrote to himself in Greek because it's a more beautiful language, because Greek was the language of the philosophers. And again, it's just a remarkable achievement that even a single passage in this book is intelligible or usable or universal as it is, because he wasn't thinking about you at all. When Marcus says, you do this, you should do this, you need to stop doing this, he's not really talking to you, talking to himself, but he's doing it so specifically and earnestly and authentically that it has impact and resonance with all of us all these years later. The last thing you should know about Marcus is how he departed from this world. Marcus supposedly spends the last minutes of his life telling his friends, why are you weeping for me? Think about the plague, he said. Think about the people it's claimed. Think about your own fragility and mortality. That, we understand, was said in the last moments of his life. But even the last pages of Meditations point at this as well. He says, you've lived your life as a great citizen in a great city, 500 years or 100, what's the difference? The laws make no distinction. And he says, now you're being sent away. Why is that so terrible? He said, like the curtain coming down on an actor, but I've only gotten through three acts. He says, yes, this is a drama in three acts, a length fixed by the power that created you and now directs your dissolution. Neither was yours to determine. And then these are the last words that he publishes, and they're worth remembering and carrying with us today. Those are just some things that you probably didn't know about Marcus that I've benefited so much from learning over the years, and I continue my study of him. I've read this book now 100 times. I've read biographies of Marcus. I've studied him 1,000 ways from 1,000 angles, but I wanted to leave you those unexpected facts about Marcus Aurelius, and I hope they leave you something to chew on. thanks for listening to the Daily Stoic podcast. Just a reminder, we've got signed copies of all my books in the Daily Stoic store. You can get them personalized. You can get them sent to a friend. The obstacle is the way. Ego is the enemy. Stillness is the key. The leather-bound edition of the Daily Stoic. We have them all in the Daily Stoic store, which you can check out at store.dailystoic.com. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Daily Stoic early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts.
There's a lot of things we know would be good for us. Problem is, we don't have time. It's just tougher. I think therapy is like that. We all know that sitting down, talking to someone, really working on our issues will make a difference. So the problem is finding a therapist, driving across town, all of that, right? And that's where Talkspace comes in, today's sponsor. Because by doing everything online, Talkspace has made getting the help you want easier, more accessible, and more affordable. With Talkspace, you can sign up online and get a personalized match with a provider that's right for you, typically within 48 hours. You can have virtual sessions with your licensed therapist from the comfort of your home. And Talkspace is secure and private, using the latest end-to-end grade encryption to store client information and complying with the latest HIPAA regulations. As a listener of this podcast, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter code SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/stoic and enter promo code SPACE80, that's 80, to get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show. That's Talkspace.com/stoic, promo code SPACE80.